How do you feel about Kyle Hendricks after he gave up four runs in four innings, including a home run nearly hit all the way to Lake Michigan? And how could and should the Cubs feel after their weekend home split against the lowly fish, the Marlinas, if you will?
Disappointed. I think they have to be disappointed the way they blew the game on Saturday in the first game of the doubleheader, and then to lose the series finale. Adbert Alzolay and Kyle Hendricks have emerged as the biggest question marks on that pitching staff. They have a closer issue. They've got a Hendricks issue. Kyle Hendricks gave up four runs in four innings, and we're talking about the positive steps that he made. Think about that. For a team that is in pretty good shape everywhere else, for a team that is legitimately a front runner in the NL Central and has realistic playoff aspirations, you can't wait forever. You cannot wait forever. And if there were positive signs and good steps and all of the feel-good language afterward, you can't also ignore the fact that this was the fifth straight time where he did not go beyond five innings. Killing your bullpen. You need him to have some length. You need him to have to go deeper, and he needs to be better. He knows it. Everybody knows it. It's just a matter of how long can you wait? What are you going to do in terms of an alternative? And where is this season headed if you don't do something? So I'm very curious to see if he gets another start, comes up with some sort of injury on the injured list, or what they do with Kyle Hendricks. Is he a bullpen guy at this stage of his career? I don't know, but he's not getting it done in the rotation.
Yeah, just not good enough, not getting it done. But I'm just flabbergasted that they split against the Marlins, and it goes back to game one. How in the world? Has anybody asked Craig Counsell the thought process? So you give Adbert Alzolay the ball again, and you're asking him to do a four-out save. What are you doing? Why didn't you have Hector Neris do that, and then maybe have Alzolay come in game number two? I just don't understand. And then, pregame yesterday. Well, he won't be the closer today. Oh. Okay, well, that's what you get for the highest paid manager in baseball. He finally realizes that on Sunday, Adbert Alzolay won't be the closer. But after being miserable, he asks the guy to get a four-out save. Doesn't make any sense to me at all. And why was he not asked to explain that? Explain it. Explain the thought process. Please. Go. And no, Kyle Hendricks doesn't deserve another start. He's not a bullpen guy, and he doesn't deserve another start at this point.
Well, Kyle Hendricks has tenure, and we all know it's hard to get rid of a tenured professor. So, I don't know. This is a bad one. This is a real problem. There is no hiding the fact that this hasn't started well, and it hasn't shown any signs of subsiding. So, contact the department chair. I think, first of all, if you're a fan, drop that class. You do not want to be watching the professor because you're not going to learn anything the way things are going. That fourth inning was bizarre, wasn't it? He barely faced, and he barely pitched. He got out of here. How many pitches had he thrown? Nine pitches in that inning. He was in the 50s when they had to pull him. Because Craig Counsell told you, well, you know, the left-handed heart of the order is coming up. We had to do something. It is bad. Kyle Hendricks, no gouda. You got a serious issue with rolling him out there again. I'm not sure. You got 16 straight games right now. You're off today. Then you play 16 in a row. You know what you can't do? You can't roll in a guy who can barely go four innings because you are going to use up your bullpen and you're going to have extended problems. Kyle Hendricks looks like an opener this year. He doesn't look like a starting pitcher.
To that point, entering yesterday, opposing batters were hitting .727, 8-for-11 with three homers, five walks, and no strikeouts when facing Hendricks for a third time in the order.
That's a problem, man. You got an issue here, Dustino. Solve it.
Wow, that's a good question.
And that's the voice of John Heyman. He's here at 7:25 with Mully and Haw. How disgraceful has the opening of the season been for the White Sox? Another shutout in Philadelphia, followed by nearly being no hit and another bad loss yesterday. Do you expect a reaction or anything from ownership? What should they do immediately?
I hate to say it, but I don't know why Pedro Grifol has a job. I mean, I don't blame him, but he's overseeing a disaster. And you do feel like there's a guy doing the broadcast every day that has better ideas than the guy managing the team. I mean, I'm sorry, but that is just the reality of the situation. Does he deserve to get fired? Did they give him a team that can't win? I understand all that stuff, but they finally yesterday sat down the first baseman after the day before he went 0-for-3 with three strikeouts. He didn't get the golden sombrero because he didn't get another at bat. I mean, give me a break. You're one of the seeming building blocks that you've been relying on. He can't play. You got a catcher that doesn't belong in the organization, doesn't belong in baseball, and you're rolling him out there. You've got so many guys that can't hit their weight, and you're not doing a damn thing about it. Andrew Benintendi, why is he on this team? He's terrible. Poor Lenin Sosa tries to run down Bryce Harper and then realizes Trey Turner is going to score, so he throws the ball into next month.
Why is he poor Lenin Sosa?
Because he's forced to play.
He's bad.
He's forced to play because they have injuries
Don't
everywhere.
Stick up for Lenin Sosa.
I feel bad for him because
he should have been benched.
He's been totally exposed. The fact of the matter is that this is a really poorly constructed team. You hired the wrong people in the wrong positions, and you left them there. And it comes down to the only guy that can make any changes is the owner, and he needs to do it. And why are we waiting? What's the point? Do something.
Did you just call for something. John Schriffen to manage this team?
I mean, I don't think I did, but that's better than Pedro.
It's hard to blame Pedro, but it's what Pedro says. If we just put our foot on home plate more times than the other team, we'll win the game. And you know, I've seen streaks like this. I've been parts of No. You haven't been part of a streak like this. This is a franchise worse streak. Yeah. This team has been around for over 100 years. They've never been this bad ever. The first thing I think is you have to get rid of the catcher. I mean, if you're talking about something today, like immediate, that's like actually could possibly, I mean, sure, they should sell the team today. They should cancel the season today. They should forfeit tonight's game in Minnesota, and they should just go back to 35th and Shields and work on fundamentals. But those things aren't going to happen. But the first thing you could do is sit a catcher down that can't frame anymore, can't stop the ball, and is hitting
0-57.
That's the first thing you should do.
They're on pace to win, what, 24 games?
23 or 24 terrible. Games, something like that.
First.
Yeah.
You're not going to accomplish anything by firing the manager, but you have to do something at some point that's not fair, but what is. Ozzie Guillen would be a obvious alternative. I don't know if they would consider that. That would be such an admission, and I don't know that I would want
it
Ozzie.
It would be stupid not to.
I don't know if I would want Ozzie to endure all that the next manager, the current manager, any manager is going to endure with a team that has no talent, that has paid the wrong guys and made some poor decisions. And I don't know if there's help on the way or not. You look at Jonathan Cannon, tonight's pitcher. You look at Nick Destrini, Sunday's pitcher, and you wonder if there's hope there. But it's hard to see. It's microscopic evidence of some sort of hope. And you've got to do something to change the subject or to give people something to believe in. Right now, there is absolutely nothing except for a common belief that Jerry Reinsdorf needs to sell the team sooner rather than later.
Both questions are hard.
That's the voice of Casey Johnson. He is here at 8 o'clock. What do you make of our guy, Casey Johnson, reporting that the Bulls have offered DeMar DeRozan a 2-year deal for as much as $40 million a year, but DeRozan is looking for more years. Will he be back next year?
Both sides want to get this done. Both sides are motivated, I think, to find a common ground. So there's a sense that there will be a compromise. We'll talk about what Arturis Karnišovas had to say about the future of the Bulls in the next question. But I think when you look at DeMar DeRozan, if they are convinced that he is going to be somebody they want to keep and they're going to build around him or find a way, because let's face it, if you're going to pay DeMar DeRozan, you know, $35 to $40 million a year, you're accepting all that that represents. And he is the master of the mid-range. He does things offensively that you're not going to be able to do if he is the guy that's taking all the big shots. And he is Mr. Clutch, and you love that. You love that about a veteran who has been terrific and on his way probably to the Hall of Fame. But I don't know that you're going to make the kind of significant change to your roster if you're going to reinvest in somebody with his game, with that skill set. So it may be a complicated equation, but I do think that if both sides are motivated to get it done, they're going to get it done.
I like DeMar DeRozan a whole heck of a lot, but I think that's just insane cash for DeMar DeRozan. So you pay DeMar DeRozan, we'll even go back, we'll say $35 million a year for 2 years. And what, you lose in the play-in? If he couldn't will that team to beat the Heat on Friday night, what makes you think that over the next 2 years, because all of a sudden Zach LaVine's no longer going to be there? What we need to know is, what are you doing with Max LaVine's money, right? That's what you need. Who are you partnering? Because running this thing back minus Max LaVine gets you where exactly?
Well, and that's the thing. You are exactly right, Dustin. You can talk all you want about being willing to change and the team we put together hasn't worked out and we're going to change it. Does that mean that Zach LaVine's gone? Is that it? Does that count since you didn't have him this year effectively? Is that what you're saying? That you're going to roll back the same group other than him? I gotta wonder. I love DeMar DeRozan. I got a lot of time for him. I think he's had a phenomenal career. I don't know how you get better. I do not know how you get better if you're rolling the same guys back. And, you know, I get it. You know, you look at the contracts and you can't help but, you know, Nikola Vukovic is going nowhere, right? He's still under contract himself. How are you getting any better? I mean, you gotta bring Kobe back. You gotta bring Caruso back. Io deserves to be back here. Now you want Patrick Williams back? Why? Because you don't have to pay him? You got to find guys you won't pay?
You're gonna have to pay him.
Well, this is my point though. How much can you afford to pay him? He's not worth it. I'm telling you, they got real serious problems with this group. And Dustin's right. If you can get rid of that money, but David, let's say you're trading Zach LaVine. You're trading him for either someone else's problem or you're going to eat half the damn contract.
Well, no, that's a good question.
Well, that's the voice of DeMar DeRozan. What did you think of AK postseason addressing the media on Saturday, especially when he said this about the Bulls' policy on the luxury tax?
My approach looking at the luxury tax is like, if you can prove that your team is going to be in the top four, you go in a luxury tax. And I think, you know, it just makes no sense to, let's say, to be in a fringe and to be in playing if you're going to be in the luxury tax. So as long as I can, you know, put a team together that can be competing in top four, that's when you're going to start looking at to go in east, I would say. That's when you start looking, retaining guys and going in a luxury tax. I think that would be my approach.
All right, your reaction to his approach on the luxury tax.
I don't think you need to worry about going into the luxury tax because I don't think he's going to get this roster into a position where you go into a season thinking, wow, you know, Bulls are going to be in the top four in the East. The Bulls are going to be in the play-in game, right? That's the upside. The chance to make the play-in game seems more capable for them, the 9 seed, the 10 seed, than actually being able to finish as the 4th seed. How are they possibly? I mean, you know, barring the injuries being really severe, okay? If Joel Embiid is indeed going to be somehow have to have surgery and miss next season, if Giannis blew out his Achilles tendon, you're praying for major. You're never getting past Boston, no matter what. What are they talking about? That's a pie in the sky. They're under the luxury tax. This is what we learned, and they're not going to be very good.
Well, it almost goes into that clip that we had from Jerry Reinsdorf, where I don't know if he realized that he was being recorded. Like, you just do well enough. You just do well enough that you fill the building every night. You're selling hope. You're selling, we're just on the cusp of it. But I got to say, the Celtics are really good. No doubt. Cavs, they're pretty good. The
Knicks.
They're okay, right. but they're just okay, and yeah. They're the second seed. My point is like, tell me how you can build a team that can get past. Like, okay, like you could. I think they could be top four with the right moves. But what are the right moves? Is it the right coach? And is it, you know, when he tells me that Patrick Williams is coming back, that just to me automatically means you don't know what you're doing. I'm sorry, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. Patrick Williams is not part of anything top four, except top four overpaid people in the NBA.
Saturday was the first time that Arturis Karnišovas said and acknowledged publicly that this group hasn't worked. Everybody agrees and understands that, and I think that was progress. I didn't like the way he presented the message. I don't think you need to read off a prepared script if you're speaking from the heart and speaking in a way that everyone can relate to. It clouded the message a little bit, or maybe it dulled the impact, because I don't think at this stage, 4 years on the job, you need to do that. You shouldn't speak from the heart. And I think that it would resonate a little bit. Now, talking about what they haven't done, I think that was a good sign of progress. He understands this group hasn't worked. They're going to have to get creative. We don't know what it is, but it is the NBA. We do know that teams find ways to get creative to change and to overturn their rosters. I don't know about Vooch moving forward. I don't think Patrick Williams deserves to be paid big money to stay. They've got to find a partner for Zach LaVine. All of these things. And they have to be willing to go into the luxury tax. The top four thing, it does create this kind of game where we're guessing, what did he really mean? Is this Jerry Reinsdorf's edict? Is it for a top four in the East mean you have more home revenue because you're going to get more playoff games and you're going to be the home team in those playoff series? All kinds of skepticism, which is appropriate when you have a team as underachieving as the Bulls have been. I liked what he said, but now he's got to back up those words with some strong and bold actions. I don't know if he's capable of it, and I don't know that his delivery was very convincing and won over anybody who might have been on the fence.
These are concerns and questions that people are asking.
All right, let's talk some Blackhawks. What did you think overall of the tone of the comments from the Blackhawk players or the GM, Kyle Davidson, when they spoke Saturday after a 23-53-6 season? Anybody's words stand out?
Kyle Davidson said that losing is over. Good. They need to be in contention next year for a playoff spot, even if they don't get there. They need to be more competitive and start winning now. What stood out was Seth Jones basically calling out the organization for having too many guys that weren't necessarily good fits. Tyler Johnson also. Everyone had the same type of tone. Boy, this was tough. Boy, it's hard to win when you have guys on one-year contracts that aren't kind of pulling in the same direction. It implied that Luke Richardson has done a better job of getting this team to actually compete on a regular basis than maybe we give him credit for. I liked hearing from Connor Bedard. I know he's going to be playing for Team Canada over the offseason, just as long as he doesn't get hurt. Nick Foligno, very strong as well. You heard some accountability from the Blackhawks, and that's a good sign because they've got a long way to go still.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with accountability, that's for sure. And I like the fact that Kyle Davidson saying, okay, we are at the point where we don't want to be in the position where we're competing for the top first, second, third pick in the NHL draft. They want to be better. All right, well, then let's see it, right? Let's see if they get lucky again in the draft. Let's pair that person with Connor Bedard. Let's find a – they got to find a better goalie, probably, right? Am I wrong about that? You're okay with the goalie right
Mrazek
now?
Mrazek had a heck of a year for a team that
for
was
the
that
team
bad.
For a team that's that bad? Okay. Yes. I mean, you know, I guess it's easy to blame everything on the goalie, but yeah, they're still not great on the blue line, right, and all that. So they've got a lot to do, but I'm glad they're, like, accountable at least. They're not hiding from it.
Yeah, they gotta start winning. They're moving into a different point of the rebuild next year. They still are very young. They still are going to have more talent coming in. They still have a lot of picks in this year's draft. But I think that just for the health of the organization, for the health of the guys that are there, and I don't mean physical health, I mean mental health, at some point, you know, even with gym rats like Bedard, you can't keep showing up and losing every night. You can't keep looking for moral victories because you played better than someone thought or there was a great individual moment in a game. I think it's only fair to the guys that are showing up and working that you go out. And, you know, I thought Jones said it well. Like, go out and get some free agents. You know, go out, spend some money. It's exactly what you need to do. You need to get better. And they, you know, they just weren't competent. There were times they were really exciting and they were really fun. And like I said, the young talent, especially Bedard, worth the price of admission. I think people love that. But good God, get better. And the guys you sign have to hold up so you can trade them. Or they got to hold up so you don't have to get rid of them and they end up playing elsewhere because they were bad citizens. You got to do a better job of that. Period. End of story.